Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice. Okay, let's talk about holidays and divorce.
It's meant to be the happiest time of year, isn't that how the song goes? But it's often a really stressful time for families, especially when alcohol is involved. But our friends at SoberLink want to help. SoberLink has teamed up with me, along with other divorce and family law experts, to provide information that could give you some real peace of mind during the holidays.
Everyone indulges during the holiday season, but if you're struggling with alcohol or your ex-spouses, it can be a really tricky time of year, especially if you're worried about the safety of your children.
And for those of you who still haven't heard about SoberLink, you guys, it is the solution if you are going through a divorce and a custody case involving alcohol.
Like you, SoberLink works hard to keep children safe, offering a remote alcohol monitoring system that is the gold standard because of its technology. Don't miss out on SoberLink's free guide for the upcoming holiday season.
You can request it today at www.soberlink.com/notsuck.
Hey there. You ready to go?
I'm ready for this. Let's do it.
But remember, with mediation, I always find it's cheaper than litigation and it's quicker.
You don't know until you try. And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
I am ready too, because it's the end of the week for us and I'm feeling pretty energized. Yesterday was kind of an off day for me, but today it's so weird how you can wake up the day after an off day and feel like fabulous. So today I'm in fabulous mode. Yesterday I was in like wah wah, but here I am fabulous today.
It's funny that you said that, because I bet for so many of our listeners who are going through, you know, a divorce process, you know, like their lives are like that. There's like one day where it's really hard and they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then the next day they wake up, they're like, all right, here we go again. Like,
yeah,
let's take on the day. It is so cold to me right now here in Chicago. I spent the week in Texas with my family and it is not that cold there. And so when I landed this morning and there was like blowing snow and gray and just cold, I feel it in my bones.
Well, it's not even that for me, because I don't really care about the cold. You know what bothers me? I feel like an old lady saying this. It's like, am I ever going to see the sun again? Mm-hmm. I think that was part of my day yesterday. I was just having an off day. I was nasty.
Mm.
You know what? That's okay. That's okay.
Have you heard of seasonal affective disorder?
Yes.
like such a thing for people like here. And I know they say that almost everybody in Chicago is vitamin D deficient because we're not outside enough and we don't get enough sunlight. But I know like so many people here talk about how winter, because it's just so gray outside and it's like day after day of it being cold and you're just not that much to do. And it just makes you feel like, oh, so I'm glad today is better for you. My body is still in like climate shock. Like I'm bundled up right now under blankets and I'm like, oh my God, why do we live here?
I hear you. But if you haven't been to Chicago, it is a fabulous city. It's just, it can get a little draining. I'm sure like other places, Seattle, I mean, you guys never see the sun, but you know, for us after a while, we're over it. And I'm kind of, yesterday I was at the over it phase, but this leads me into my obsessed. I love this segment because it brings about things that we didn't even know we needed.
Things that we're literally obsessed with.
I was having such a cranky day yesterday. So I hadn't seen the sun. I really was so busy at work. I didn't move around enough. And you know, I have a love of walking and I also lift weights, which I love doing. But one of my thoughts this month was, all right, everything seems a little out of control. It's the holiday season. I just feel like work is piling up, kids are everything's piling up. So I thought to myself, you need to take a little more time for you and start maybe increasing your working out a little bit, just so you have some mental health, better mental health. So I started back at, and I haven't been there since 2019, but I started going to a few Orange Theory classes. Have you ever been?
No, it's one of the few like types of workouts that I've never done. What is Orange Theory like?
It's awesome. I mean, I am like one class back and I am obsessed with it. And that's why I'm having such a good day today, but I will tell you what it's like. It's pretty great. And I've done studios kind of all over and they're all pretty similar. So they've got three different things that you do. The treadmill, you don't have to run. You can walk. You can literally like crawl if you need to. There's elderly people that are doing it. So it's all about what works for you. And then there's a rowing machine, which is my most hated machine, but I still do it. And then the last one is weightlifting. And they have all different programs. Every day is a different program. But the cool thing is you're monitoring. You have a heart monitor. So you know kind of when you're in this zone, which is the orange zone. I know, Orange Theory. And you're supposed to stay within your orange zone. So you see your name and you see what zone you're in. And that's kind of the premise of the class. But regardless, it's really great. I'll tell you why I love it so much. One is the hour goes by super fast. And the music's awesome and you're just in your zone for 1 hour. You're almost thinking about nothing else because you're busy thinking about what you're doing. And I know that other workouts, you know, when I walk, when I lift weights, I'm in my own head, which is lovely at times, but I'm still thinking. Whereas at Orange Theory, I'm shut down. It's just about what I'm getting done there. And so then today, when I was so crabby yesterday, I said, all right, get your life together. You're going to go at 7:30. Tomorrow morning before you start your day and get it together. And it's amazing. One class in the morning before you start your day. And I'm pretty happy today and it's still gray, but I'm okay. So my obsession this week is Orange Theory.
Girl.
If you haven't tried it, maybe give it a try. It's not for everyone, but it certainly has helped me today.
Hey, it sounds like it saved you.
Yeah, probably. I'd probably be pretty nasty on this podcast if not.
I believe in the power of exercise. I don't do Orange Theory, but I work out pretty much every day. And this past week, like I said, I was in Texas and it wasn't like a fun trip. It was I had to go and help take care of family and it's stressful and it's hard. And it's not like, it wasn't like a vacation. I worked out every day while I was there. And it boosts your serotonin. I'm really into strength training because I mean, it's just so important to build that muscle in your body. But one of the days that I was there, it was warm enough for me to go on like a long walk or hike. And that's great too. But I think like move your body.
Just moving.
And try Orange Theory. Why not? Right? Like try, like you don't know until you try. You don't know something that's going to work for you. Speaking of, you don't know until you try. Today's episode, we're talking about what actually happens in mediation. So many people will say, oh, there's no way that we can mediate. There's no way. We're never going to agree. Never. It's not worth it. And what I want you guys to do while you listen to this episode is think, you don't know until you try. You don't know. There's a reason why mediation exists. That's what we're going to get into. And we're going to kind of pull back the curtain a bit and give you guys an inside look on what possibilities are from mediation, how it's designed, and some tips on how you can make the most of this experience, because you, your ex, your attorney, their attorney, you all have the same objective to get out of this thing alive, right? So this is one of the many tools. Recently, I was actually chatting with a divorced friend of mine. We were standing in the middle of a Whole Foods where all magical conversations take place. And she mentioned to me in passing that she had something called a binding mediation. And it dawned on me, standing right there, I'm thinking, oh, huh, on our podcast, we have not really dug into the topic of mediation yet. And it's actually like a wonderland of opportunities or missed opportunities.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, so we all know that there's certain people that can't be helped, right? I mean, and a lot of people think that their ex can't be helped. But the fact of the matter is, even with the most difficult people that I've dealt with, my clients or the other side, I would say that 90% of my cases are settled in mediation if they give it a try. And caveat, if you choose the right mediator.
That's interesting what you just said. So you guys, we are going to break down for you lucky listeners what actually happens in mediation and how you can use these precious, precious sessions to your advantage. So let's start here, Morgan. Why does mediation even exist?
So I wish I had the perfect answer of why it exists. I think I know why it exists, at least for me. Mm-hmm. It exists for me where I practice because our court system's really backed up. And our court system, the judges are taught a book of laws and they have to apply your case to laws. And it's basically like fitting a square into a round circle at times because your case doesn't fit into every perfect law or decision, but you're handing it over to somebody you've never met before to make your decisions for you on the most precious things in your life, your kids, your finances, your future. Can you imagine that?
That'd be like,
and if I was the judge yesterday and I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, can you imagine what a judge is doing with your case if they're woke up on the wrong side of the bed? Because it happens. So mediation gives you the ability to step out of that court system, take control in your hands, and work out an agreement that's more creative than potentially the law allows for.
If you participate in mediating, do judges tend to look at you more favorably because it appears like you're playing ball to get like something resolved without it being dependent on the judge to make a ruling? Or is that not really a thing?
I think it's place dependent, because mm-hmm. some judges with little calls are, they're like, oh, well, that's nice that you're doing that. That's nice. No one really looks down upon it. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, sometimes judges are so busy, they don't remember that you did it. But I will tell you that most judges like that because you're taking their work off their plate. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty open to sending you there or saying, good luck, go do this. They're going to give you a little bit of a runway to do it because you're not asking for their time at that point. So it is favorable and they may look at it favorably.
So let's talk everybody through the process just for those people who are listening to the show who have not yet started the divorce process, right? They're thinking like, I don't know, I kind of want to get a divorce. And they're hearing us starting to talk about mediation and they're like, what the hell are they even talking about? Right. So why don't we break down for people what it is and what it looks like?
Okay, so we're going to break it down, what it is, what it looks like, and then maybe I think we should even talk about what the gold standard in my mind and how to do it best is.
Okay.
But remember, it's different in every place. So for instance, we're in Chicago. I've mediated a ton of cases in Chicago. I also had the ability recently to co-counsel on a matter in Florida and mediate there, which was awesome experience. But I will tell you, they do things very differently there. At the end of the day, the one thing that's the common denominator is that there's a mediator. And that person, and remember this, that person is, should either be an attorney who is a seasoned attorney in family law or a former family law judge. Because the problem is that I've seen too many people come to me with potential agreements they've worked out in mediation with somebody who is not a lawyer, which is your first problem, doesn't practice in your area, second problem, or third, is nothing. He's basically off the street saying they're a mediator for divorce cases. So avoid that.
Okay, so what you're saying is that theoretically, people can be a mediator, but they're not a qualified mediator in your eyes. Is that what I'm getting?
Absolutely. And all okay. they have to do is put something on the internet that they're a mediator and that they can settle divorce cases.
Oh
and
my God.
That is not appropriate. So you need somebody who's seasoned in your area and either is a lawyer that's been in the business a while or a former family law attorney.
And you can easily Google this about them, I would imagine, right? Like, yes. Let's say you get recommended to a particular mediator. Should you, like, what, how does somebody vet whether a mediator that they've been assigned to, and let's talk about that also, Morgan, typically, are you assigned to a mediator or is it just kind of like, you guys should mediate? Good luck.
Okay. So I do want to back up one second too, because one thing that I forgot to say was also in certain areas, if it's a really seasoned psychologist and you're dealing with parenting issues and they are in the divorce world, ask your attorney. They may be an appropriate mediator for parenting issues, not for finances. Okay. Your second question that you just asked, which was essentially related to the point of remind me again.
Well, two part. One, in most, like I can only speak to, you know, my case and what I know people have personally gone through, but is there a general protocol for, let's say, Chad and Brenda are getting divorced. There's a topic that he's always back. And there's a topic that needs to be mediated. Let's just say for argument's sake that it's over the parenting agreement. Okay. They can't come to a decision between the attorneys of what they want. Chad wants every other weekend and Brenda wants every weekend. Let's just say they can't agree. Do their attorneys then say, go mediate this. Good luck finding somebody. Or is it the kind of thing where they say, go mediate, and this is who we recommend you mediating with? And then Chad and Brenda go and vet that mediator.
Okay, so that's a good question. There's a bunch of ways to get to mediation. So sometimes, depending on what court system you're in, the court will mandate that you have to go to mediation. Mm. And sometimes they have court-approved mediators, sometimes they have a list, or it's the county mediator. So that's number one. Not my favorite kind of thing, unless the person is a really seasoned, great mediator and you want to talk to your lawyer about it, because usually they're like kind of churn and burn, quick in and out mediators. What you would like to do, what the gold standard is to talk to your lawyer, get ahead of it, say, we'd like to mediate, and have your lawyer suggest a few names to you to even talk to your spouse about or through opposing counsel that you can start vetting that are good and meet the criteria that we just talked about, which is, remember, lawyer, a judge in the division or in the practice, in if it's a parenting issue, potentially a seasoned psychologist.
And both parties have to agree on the mediator, right? It's not the kind of thing where Brenda can say, I found this person who I want to mediate. And Chad's like, I don't like her. And Brenda's like, too bad. I already hired her. That
right.
cannot happen.
Generally correct. Unless the judge orders you to go to somebody. Usually in my business, what we do is pick somebody. So if somebody, that's why we offer three, sometimes five names. And what we say, the best way to do it is to say to the other side, hey, why don't you suggest three or five names and we'll choose one, or vice versa.
Okay. Now that was going to be my next thing. So why don't you go ahead? I know what you're about to say. I think I do at least because I'm getting really good at reading your mind now. But why did you just say what you said about having the other side start the process?
Because it takes the wind out of any argument. So, right. You know, the thing is that everyone's going to think if I send over three names randomly mm-hmm. that, oh, we're in with these people, which mediators are neutral people. And we'll talk about that. But it's just the appearance. So if you say to the other side, why don't you send me names? If it's a good lawyer on the other side, they're not going to send you Joe Schmo from the street. They're going to have, you know, 3 to 5 good people that are qualified, and you can find at least one.
This, what you just said, reminds me of one of the episodes that we had Bill Eddy on when we were talking about, I think it was like his ear technique, mm-hmm. which I can't remember what. I know ear stood for empathy. Oh God, I can't remember the whole acronym. But anyway, I know that one of the things was just taking down the level of conflict, you know, like don't raise the stakes, try to lower everything, because the whole point of mediation is that you're going to try to come to a resolution together. So if you come in and you're like, this is who I want. No, and I'm not going to listen to who you want. This is who I want. Well, then you're not really starting the process off on the foot of let's find resolution.
Yeah. And you know, one other piece of advice that I don't like, and I've seen it happen a bunch, is a client will come to me after they have, so they will interview me as their lawyer after they've selected a mediator, either jointly or by themselves.
Really?
Yeah. So they'll find someone on the internet. Someone will recommend somebody. Sometimes they're the right people. Sometimes they're the people I would recommend, but sometimes they're not. But the
problem— Why are they hiring a mediator before they hire an attorney? That doesn't make— how do they know they're going to mediate?
Well, they must have heard something about mediation. That's usually what happens. We want to keep it amicable. So then let's find the mediator. They don't know the right steps.
No.
But the problem is that if you go and hire a mediator first before lawyers, you know, I can tell by the issues and also the personalities whether the mediator is going to be able to get the job done. So you may say, oh my gosh, this mediator is fabulous. And maybe they are fabulous, but maybe they're just not the right fit for you or potentially your spouse, because there's certain mediators, certain characteristics that can help get it done.
Different personalities work for different people. And if, I mean, I know from all the people that I've talked to that a good attorney will lead you to a mediator that's not only right for you, but who's right for the person that you're mediating with. So maybe that means that it's somebody with like a very quiet and calm demeanor. Yes. Right?
Yes.
Because if you can tend to get a little bit loud and explosive when things aren't going your way, this is the person that keeps everything even. Now, let's talk about what mediation actually looks like, because the divorce process that I personally went through looks a lot different, because I got divorced during COVID, which I've said a million times. So I was not in person for anything. So let's talk about, in a normal world, if a couple is mediating, is it the kind of thing, Morgan, where like everybody's sitting in a big conference room, like kind of like what we all see in the movies, where you're sitting on one side of the table with short little glasses of water, and you know they're sitting on the other side of the table, and it's like, well, my client says this. Well, my client says this. Is that what it looks like?
So totally different depending on every mediator. But I think the better way to go about this discussion is to talk about what I find is the most important and creative way to do it. And then if your lawyer, you know, ask them about this process and maybe even suggest some of these suggestions that I'm making. But you're jumping ahead a little bit, so I'm going to back up. Just as tact. So let's say
I just want to get to the part that's like the movies.
You want to get to the good meat and potatoes, you know, the explosive stuff. All right. But before we get there, so let's just say that we've picked a mediator, right?
Okay.
You and the other side have agreed on somebody. And I'm talking gold standard. I'm talking, what can you do the perfect way? Now, it may never happen the perfect way, but if you could do everything perfectly, what I would like to see is a meeting with you and the mediator first. Then the mediator may want to meet with the other side and his or her lawyer second, or, you know, first. It doesn't matter. The mediator, remember, is neutral. But it's like going to a doctor. Do you want to show up on your first day of mediation, like showing up to your first day of surgery and never meeting the person who's going to operate on you? That does not feel good. So you want to be have an hour's worth of time of the mediator, whether it's in Zoom or in person, that you can look them in the eye, tell them your story. The other point of why it's so important is not only for your comfort, but it's for the mediator, if they're good, to start grasping where they think there's going to be issues with you and with your ex. So a good mediator will start pinpointing, oh, this is a trigger point, or, oh, this is going to be an issue. So I need to start thinking about how we talk through that issue. Mm-hmm. So that's the importance of the first meeting with the attorney and the mediator. And sometimes mediators want to meet with just you, which is fine, as long as your attorney has prepped you for that first meeting.
Got it. Okay.
So that's
after,
the first.
So after the meet and greet date, what comes next?
After the meet and greet date, you're prepping for what the mediation looks like. And what you should be doing with your lawyer is asking them for a strategy. So asking them, hey, what's our end goal here? Like, what would be a good outcome for me? So start wrapping your head around what a good outcome could look like. Ask your lawyer.
A good outcome or like a realistic outcome?
When I say good, I mean realistic. What is a realistic outcome? And thank you for clarifying, of where this case could land for me. And then you should tell your lawyer too in that meeting what really matters to you, where you really want to see, you know, things happen, and get a realistic expectation of whether that's possible.
I will say, and I don't share much about my divorce on this show for like obvious reasons, but I will say that one thing that I did with any situation, and I do this even outside of divorce, is I try to rank things in like order of importance. So I remember saying, this is something that's really, really important to me. So if I had to strategize, this right here is what I really, really, really want to resolve. And then underneath that would be this. And then underneath that would be this. Is that kind of what you mean, Morgan? Or is that something that you would not have people do, kind of ranking order of importance?
Oh, I think ranking is a great way to be interactive about your case. Me as a lawyer personally, what I do is I figure out scenarios. This is scenario A of where I want to go in at. This is maybe a move to scenario B of a counter proposal. This is C. Mm-hmm. This is ultimately where I want to end up. And what I do with the client is I don't tell them every move, because it could be manipulated or moved depending on what we get back from the other side. But I do tell them, this is realistically where it could end up. This is a good outcome. This is a great outcome. And this is potentially what would happen if we threw mediation to the wind and went to the judge.
Okay.
So you want to know going in what the outcomes could be. So that's something you have to talk to your lawyer about.
Okay.
Okay. So then we go to the first day of mediation. So the first day of mediation, you should know either before mediation or right when you first say hello to the mediator, good morning, good afternoon to the mediator, what it's going to look like. And this is something a lot of people want to know before the first day, which is, are we meeting together in one room with both lawyers and both parties and the mediator? Mm-hmm. Are you separating us? When would we come together? Mm-hmm. So that is, and mediators, even the best mediators, depending on the parties and when they meet with them and what they see, change strategies. And they may even change it that morning, depending on. So I have a lot of mediators that say, I'm going to say hello to you guys, and then I'm going to move to the next group and say hello. And after they meet with both groups, if somebody's amped up or agitated or whatever it is, they may say, you know what, we were all going to meet together, but we're going to change it now. And what we're going to do is we're going to stay in our separate rooms, and I'm going to look to Morgan to give us the first proposal.
Okay. So it's like a back and forth. So for some, it's a back and forth kind of thing. So then they're going to say, okay, Morgan, you're the representative of this party. What for the matter of the dog dishes, what does your client want to do? Right. And then you say, my client would like to smash them into a million pieces and have them scattered on Chad's lawn.
They're like, that's right.
Okay. But well, we'll be right back.
Yeah. If we're going to back up though, for the gold standard, what I'd love to see is, depending on everybody, and this is something we do here where I practice, but for instance, when I went to Florida to do the mediation, they did not do this, and they'd actually never heard of this. The mediator we were using, I like to get everybody together, lawyers, parties, mediator, and do joint goals. So for instance, sounds kind of ridiculous and remedial, but there's a purpose for it. So,
I thought you were going to say something like, I like to get everybody together, hold hands, and meditate.
I was thinking that you were going to have some like crazy thing that you do. And instead it was something very realistic and logical, which I should have expected from you, but.
Well, you know, and you are the ones that come, the one that comes out of left field. So maybe if meditation is a good thing, I'll use it.
I think I got mediation confused with meditation.
You know, it's like that I, it's like placed wrong.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So keep going. So you get everyone together.
You get everyone together and you do goals. So what do I mean by goals? All right. Let's talk about little Johnny, Chad's little Johnny. All right. So everyone, the mediator would go around the room and say, hey, tell me about little Johnny. What are the pros of little Johnny? What are the good things about little Johnny? So it starts getting the parties talking about their son, which they both love dearly.
Yeah.
And they start kind of toning down the anxiety, because the first hour of mediation is anxious.
Yeah.
Everyone feels that. So they start talking about little Johnny, and then the mediator would go into, what are your goals for little Johnny in the future? You know, what are the goals look like? And what that is somebody may say, I want little Johnny to be happy at both parents' house. I want little Johnny to know both were equal parents. Those are goals. So everyone writes it down. And usually by the end of the goals, you're pretty shocked because most couples have the exact same goals for little Johnny. And why do those goals matter? Well, when we're in 5 hours or 6 hours of mediation, everyone's getting tired, crabby, we're almost to the end and they're losing it. We can bring them back to those goals to say, right. Does this proposal you want me to make because you're mad that somebody smashed the dog dish on your lawn? Does mm-hmm. that help little Johnny? Does that meet that goal?
Right.
It kind of brings people down to earth.
Well, because if you think about it, you've got two people who created little Johnny together, right? And now they're divorcing. So now they've decided, we both love little Johnny, but we no longer want to be together, which means that they probably go about achieving goals differently because they've grown apart. They want different things in life. So I think it's important to see like, okay, I get that Chad wants little Johnny to be a happy and well-adjusted kid, but he wants to do that by seeing him every other weekend. And you, Brenda, want little Johnny to be a happy, well-adjusted kid. And you think that the best route of that is having him every weekend. But if we both agree that what the end result is little Johnny being happy and well adjusted, then you guys both have to give and take here in order to get to that goal.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So then what happens usually if it's a day long mediation, the mediator will shuttle between the rooms, or some mediators like to keep everybody in the same room. That is not my favorite. Inevitably, someone's going to get agitated. Inevitably, someone's going to get amped. So you want to know what kind of mediator. That's why I don't usually choose those types of mediators. I choose the ones that know the room and may start together, but then may separate, because you're a lot calmer when it's just your people in your room dealing with the proposals and the counter proposals. So basically we go back and forth and back and forth until hopefully we're down to a few issues and we can get it across the finish line. So let's say we get it in a full session. And sometimes, guys, it takes numerous days of sessions. But remember, with mediation, I always find, even if it's numerous days of sessions, it's cheaper than litigation and it's quicker. So it may seem like a lot, but you're expediting everything generally, at least from where I am.
And it's not always full day mediations. I mean,
some days are half day, some days are 2 hours. It could be whatever you need. Could be whatever you need. But if you're really negotiating a full parenting agreement from scratch or a full financial agreement, in my experience, it's usually a day, if not a few days on those agreements.
Obviously, the more points that you guys are trying to work out and resolve, the longer the mediation is likely to be. If it's not just the issue of who's getting the dog, you know, or the dog's dishes.
Yes.
Okay.
Got it. So at the end of, let's just say the day, whatever day that is for you in mediation, generally what you have is an agreement. And during the mediation, in general, one attorney is typing up what's called like a deal memo or a memorandum of understanding, something that memorializes the points that you are agreeing upon, so that when you walk out, you know exactly what the agreement is. And you want to see it written out, because there's a lot, the devil's in the details. So you could do big high level bullet points, but when you start drilling down on that, you want to say to your lawyer, yeah, but what about this? Like, for instance, it could be like, you get every other Easter. Okay, great. That sounds great. But then when you look at it on paper, you're like, well, wait a minute. What if Easter falls on spring break and spring break is not my spring break? What do we do then? Mm-hmm. So those are the little drill downs that you want to see what you're agreeing to on paper.
Okay. Now, what happens if a resolution is not reached in mediation? What are the responsibilities of the mediator as far as communicating to the judge? Because we know that a mediator is neutral in the process of mediation, but then is that mediator still neutral when they go to the judge and say, we mediated on this day, this day, this day, the clients did not come to a resolution, and BTW, I think that Brenda is a crazy bitch. Like, does that, you know, I mean, no, I know.
The funny thing is because that's a fair question, but in my world where I practice, mediators are not allowed to speak to the judge about any details. Mediation is strictly confidential. The only time they communicate generally that I see is it's a county required mediation. So the court sends you there. And then the mediator either sends a judge a note saying, we've agreed on all these points, or there's no agreement. There's no details further than that. And the judge does not read into it. And if it's a private mediation, which is what I always suggest is the gold standard, if you can afford it and do it, they never communicate anything to a judge.
What's the difference between private and not private?
So for us in Chicago, what happens is the court will say, okay, you guys need to go to mediation on parenting. Mm-hmm. And the parties can agree to either pay for a private mediator, which is the former family law judge, a high-end, you know, attorney that practices. That's option A, always the gold standard. If you can't afford it, they will send you sometimes to a mediator that they send you to. And those mediators don't usually have as much time or bandwidth to deal with the mediation. So that's the difference. And you go there, you maybe get an hour of their time, and you either agree or you don't.
Got it. So what you're saying is that if you can afford to have a private mediator, go that route, because you will what? Likely have more time with them. You'll have somebody who is possibly better qualified. Is that something that we can say, or not necessarily? Or is it just for like a myriad of reasons you want to go private if you can? Because then I guess you also have control over the personality and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. That's it. It's the control. And you also get to pick, you get to know what you're doing, you get to know their background, that kind of thing. So if you can afford it, that would be the route that I would suggest.
Okay. Besides having a realistic expectation of what can happen, what's other things that you would want? Like, if we want to give people these action steps that we love talking about on this show, and I know that the whole thing about mediation is obviously some kind of strategy, right? And like we said before, like, I know for me, I ranked what I want, right? And I'm like, okay, in the matter of this, this is what I really, really, really feel passionate about. This is really, and then the next, and then the next, and then the next. What kind of strategy can we give people, and how can we form that in some action steps so our listeners feel like they can wrap their arms around something?
Yes, I think that's a great idea. So the first thing I would say is write down your goals. And I think that kind of corresponds with what you're saying, Andrea. So write down what's most important to you to least important to you. Okay. And then I want you to have a conversation with your lawyer before mediation about the likelihood of success of those goals. So that leads into my number two, which is you want a strategy with your lawyer before going in. You want to know not only the likelihood of your goals, but also, how do we achieve this? What's it going to look like? Do we have a first move? Who's making the first proposal? Do we have a proposal to make? And also, you know, third, what to expect in mediation? So you want to have open communication with your lawyer and the mediator to say, how are we running this mediation? Am I going to see the other side? Should I prepare goals? Those are all good things to do.
I know that there are some mediators who don't like to have counsel present for mediation. Talk to me about that. Why is that?
The only time that I think that it's appropriate is if it's a very small parenting issue that I can counsel my client on, and I feel comfortable with them going to a mediator on a parenting issue because they're up to speed on what they want to ask for and how they want to do it. In general, it is a very, very bad idea to go mediate a case without an attorney.
Okay. And that's what I wanted to hear you say, because I know that sometimes, and this also might be that little flag that could pop up that could say, maybe this is not the right mediator for me, right? Like if they're saying, we don't want your counsel there. And yes, counsel is the person you're paying to represent you to keep your best interests at heart, right?
Yeah. Most mediators that I work with would never say that. In fact, they want the counsels there. The other thing that's a red flag in mediation is somebody who doesn't think creatively out of the box. So when you ask, like, what's your strategy? Are we going to be in the room together? And somebody says, oh, we're always in the room together. That's how I do it. And you're thinking to myself or yourself, my spouse is a real, you know what, he's going to lose it or she's going to lose it. And once they lose it, then I'm going to lose it. And you're thinking, how is this going to work? And you have a mediator that's not creative and not hearing you. That is not the mediator for you.
I want to speak for a minute because there's a topic that really, a term that's really trendy right now. And when I say that, I'm not making light of it. And I'm not saying that your ex is not a narcissist, but I will say that that term gets thrown around a lot. And we're all not really clear that in order to, for someone to be a narcissist, they actually need to be diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder. But we get a lot of people who say, I'm divorcing a narcissist, and mediation will never work. This has to go straight to the judge. What do you want to say to those people to encourage them to have a little bit more of an open mind?
I would say I disagree with that statement 100%. So, you know, when you're going through a divorce, nobody is their best self, even a narcissist, even you. I mean, no one is their best self. So, you know, just like me, where my job, I get paid not only to be a legal ears and eyes, but I also get paid to read people and calm the situation. Mm-hmm. That's the mediator's job as well. They have to be experts in reading people, calming people down, making sure they know the triggers. So that's perfect for somebody that may or may not be a narcissist. The mediation setting is a good place. And here's the thing, if you think they may be, or they've got all these tendencies and you're like, this is worrying me about mediation, say it to the mediator in your meeting. Mm-hmm. Say, this is the behavior that you may experience and I'm worried about it, because flag it for them.
Something that I'll say that I think is really important, and we talked about this in the very beginning, is even if you're divorcing somebody who is 100% a manipulative butthead, they might be. And that's like, I get it. They're terrible. You hate them. Your mom hates them. Your friends hate them. They're terrible, terrible, terrible. That's why you're divorcing them, right? You still want a chance at having your attorney and a mediator and their attorney help you guys come to a resolution, as opposed to throwing it out to a judge who may or may not have gone to Orange Theory that morning and could be in a terrible freaking mood, and then looks at all this stuff and for whatever reason thinks that you're the crazy butthead. And it's like, you know what? I'm not giving them anything. No, meh, meh. And then once the judge makes the decision, it's game over for you. So I think that it's really important. And I know, and I say this because we get so many messages from people who have a very like closed mind when it comes to working out disagreements in their divorce. And I just want people to be as open as possible.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's why I love former family law judges as mediators, if you can afford them. And the reason I do is because they can look, especially the difficult parties, they can look them in the eye and say, what you're saying to me makes no sense. And you will never do better at court. Never. Because I sat on the bench for 30 plus years and what you're saying makes zero sense. And they do it. And that's why it's important potentially, if you can do it, to get a former judge. And that's why not every case needs a former family law judge. But when I spot issues that I know maybe people are going to go toe to toe on, or they're going to, you know, exert whatever, you know, dominance they feel, that's when I would probably suggest a family law judge, because they'll tell it straight.
What is a binding mediation?
So binding mediations could be, you know, thought of as essentially you're walking out with a deal and it's binding. A lot of mediations that I do are not binding. So a lot of attorneys are hesitant to have people sign off on deals that are made in mediation because it's binding, you know, right, under our case law in Illinois, it can be binding. So some people want binding, other people are a little concerned about it. So most of my, I will say, I'm not always very comfortable with binding because it's a long day. People are mm-hmm. tired. And I would say that most people, if they make a comprehensive deal in bullet point, 90% of people, 90% of the cases I settle mediation, but also 90% of the people stick with the deal. They don't back out. So
in most cases, let's say after 2 days of going back and forth, the mediator says, okay, I'm writing up the, you know, the memo of what we all agreed on. And then what happens? You go back and you talk to your attorney. Chad talks to his attorney, and then somebody enters it in and you guys both sign off on it.
Not necessarily. So usually what happens is this: in the mediation setting, somebody's drafting what's called a deal memo or a memo, some understanding of what you've agreed to.
Okay.
And then it's, in my world, is printed out and you go back and forth with you and your lawyer. And you say, this is the document. Do you like this? Does this work? You negotiate language, you figure it out. So at the end of the day, when you walk out of the mediation, you have a full document that both sides have pretty much said, yeah, this is what we agree upon. Then what happens, at least in my world, is you're not done. You're not divorced. The mediator is not going to court. Their job is basically done, except for it's their job, if there's bumps, to keep following up and getting it done with you. So let's say you have this agreement, everyone's on board, you leave mediation. It has to be put into a settlement agreement document. For us, it's called a marital settlement agreement. So you basically have to still do another step, and then you go to court and the court approves that agreement.
Got it. Okay. Holy moly, there is so much information here. Let's recap these action steps for everybody that we went over just a few minutes ago, so that, again, we're reminding people of what they can walk away with that tells them these are the things that you need to do.
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing you want to do is set goals, or like Andrea said, what matters most to you, and share those with your lawyer. The second thing you want to ask your lawyer is, what is our strategy? What is the likely outcome realistically for me, given my goals? So that's number two. Mm-hmm. And the third thing you want to do before you go into mediation is ask the mediator and your lawyer what to expect going in, so that the day that you get there, you're already going to be anxious and nervous. And it does take about a good hour to come down from that, but that will lessen the burden that you have going into your mediation.
I like it. You know what else I would add? And I'm not joking. Exercise that morning before you go into mediation. Truly, we've talked about this. I can't remember. I think it might have even been in season one. We were talking about how, I think it came up in passing, you were saying how you will often take breaks with your clients. Like, if things are getting really heated in mediation, and you'll say, okay, blow the whistle, everybody out of the pool. And you get them to move their bodies, right? Because when you move your body, you're like not, you don't stay as stuck, much like you know, this morning in Orange Theory, you're moving your body, you're feeling better, it's clearing your mind. So I say, why don't we be more proactive and make sure the day that you start mediation, exercise before you go in, get yourself in like the healthiest state of mind.
I love that. And one other thing, during mediation, prepare for this. Bring a book, bring your laptop, or whatever you need to bring. There's a lot of downtime. Oh. Because when the mediator is meeting with the other side, there's a lot of downtime. It's a perfect opportunity, especially if you're stressed, to take a stroll. So a lot of times what I do with my client, if I know it's around lunchtime, we'll go out and get lunch. Or sometimes I'm like, you know what? I can just feel it from you. Let's go walk around the block, get a coffee. At one point, the client wanted a milkshake. I was like, whatever, whatever you need. But if we ask the mediator, how long do you think you'll be? Sometimes the mediator will be 2 hours with the other side. Oh, I've had that happen.
Oh man.
So you're going to have downtime, and that's a perfect time to go stroll and get your mind right for the next round.
Well, I'm exhausted. I'm glad we did that. I think that's really helpful. And as always, you guys, if you're listening to this episode and it brought up more questions for you, you know how to find us. Reach out to us. Hit us up on Instagram at How Not to Suck at Divorce. Email us from our website at How Not to Suck at Divorce. We will find a way to answer your questions. So reach out, and we are here to help you.
I totally agree with that. So what do you got for us for uplifting?
Yes, have I got a story for you guys, because it is time for Morgan's favorite segment, my least favorite segment, because sometimes these stories are so freaking cheesy. But regardless, let's be positive.
Let's be positive, because we all want some positivity in our lives.
Now we're going to do Morgan's favorite part of the episode and my least favorite part, while I have to scour the internet finding feel-good stories. I found this story, and I'm not going to give away the punchline because I'm just not going to. So stick with me, because it doesn't start off so positive, but hear me out. All righty. There's a woman named Melissa Highsmith. I think that's how she says her name. Don't know her. Oh. But Melissa Highsmith was just 22 months old when a babysitter allegedly kidnapped her from her parents' Fort Worth apartment in August of 1971.
Okay. That sounds super uplifting. Already.
I know. And that's the end of the story, you guys. So thanks so much for listening. Good luck with your mediation. Okay. No, hear me out.
I'm hearing you.
So Highsmith's mother was working as a waitress at the time, and she placed an ad in a local newspaper in order to find childcare for her daughter. The woman answered the ad. She hired her without meeting her first. Again, you guys, like, interview your mediator before you hire them. So this woman hired the babysitter without meeting them, and then took the daughter and never returned. Okay. For decades, they searched for their daughter. The husband, family members, everybody, they spent 5 decades searching for the missing girl. Eventually, when social media became a thing, they created a Facebook page called Finding Melissa. During this time, the mother was accused of murdering the daughter. Like, there was like major stuff going on, because there was no evidence of anything. It was just that she vanished. But then here comes the turnaround. After a recommendation from a genealogist, the family decided to use a home DNA test, like from 23andMe, in order to track down their daughter. And it worked. A promising DNA match turned up on 23andMe. And years later, this girl, Melissa Highsmith, is now 53 years old, and she was reunited with her parents.
Wait, okay. First of all, I think you are banned from doing these stories anymore. I will take over from now on. But
this is an amazing story.
My one question is, fabulous. I'm so glad that she's reunited. Did Melissa know she was kidnapped?
I don't know her. I don't know all of the, it just says that they are happy. It says, I couldn't stop crying. I was overjoyed, and I'm still walking around in a fog trying to comprehend that she's right in front of me. We found her. It's a Christmas miracle. You know what? Look, this is the best I can do. I'm not going to read some kind of bullshit story about, like, you know, wonderful things happening and the world is great and grand. I'm sorry. This is interesting. A girl got kidnapped. They thought her mom killed her. She didn't. They find her 53 years later or 52 years later. I'm not good at math. And you know, all's well, and it's a Christmas miracle, thanks to 23andMe. So there you have it. Hashtag not sponsored by 23andMe.
But should be
positive.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Andrea, I think our listeners are really concerned for you going forward.
It's fine. Everything is fine.
Everything's really fine over here.
Interview your babysitters and interview your mediator. Let's wrap it up.
Okay. All right, everyone, on that note, you know, we love every one of you listening to our podcast. You know that divorce is hard. We know it. We know it's draining. And sometimes the unknown can feel downright scary. And that's why we do this podcast for you. We try to help you not suck at divorce and bring you a little humor with some tough subjects.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. And the humor is why I am here. Remember, not every day of your divorce process is going to be easy. There are days where you're not going to want to get out of bed. There are going to be days where you feel like you can't stop crying. There are going to be days where you want to scream in the middle of a field. That's when you come to us. That's what we're here for. Sometimes it's hour by hour. Other times it is minute by minute.
That's exactly right. And what we ask of you, just if you like our podcast, please go on Apple Podcasts, rate us, review us, leave us a great review. We see you. We answer all of your direct messages. If you're just struggling and you need some community, that's what we're here for. We're here to help you. In fact, we'd even help your ex. Send us to anyone who you think we can help because we're here for you.
That is absolutely right. And as a reminder, come and follow us. We are on every single social media platform imaginable at How Not to Suck at Divorce. Watch our reels, watch our TikToks, watch our YouTube videos. We are here to give you more insight, more empathy, more entertainment, everything under the sun to help this crappy process a little bit less crappy for you. We are here for you. You have got this. And we have got you.